Okay.
Awesome. So here's the agenda we have for today. We'll spend a few minutes just going over what the ASO is, global policy, address council, policy development process, what the steps are, because this is different from what most ICANN community members are used to. The NRO update will be given by John Curran. IANA update from Elise Garrick. Thank you. And a few words about the IPv6 World IPv6 Day that had just occurred a couple weeks ago. Policy discussions is basically what's going on in the for the policy discussions that are going on around the world for both global policy and the regional policies. And some closing questions and answers, and on how to participate. And please do feel free to ask questions at the end of each section. This would free you up to attend another session if you need to before the end of this presentation. All right, the ASO MOU was an agreement, is an agreement between ICANN and the NRO. Paul.
Louis, I'm just wondering, we've got a pretty small audience, and
should we just skip that?
A lot of people who've been here before. I'm just wondering how much time to spend on the introductory material, because we are.
Okay, since these slides, I believe, are going up now or are already up, if you need to refer to them, please download them, and we'll take questions right at the end of the section if you need to ask. Global policy, something that requires IANA or another group. Main principles, it's an open forum, it's a transparent process, and it's bottom-up, consensus-based. Feed right through that. Please feel free to come up to the table. Let's see. Actually, here we go. There are 9 global proposals since 2001. 6 have been adopted, 2 under discussion, and 1 abandoned. Please go to the website for further information on those. As we get more people in, I'm going to invite you all to come up to the table and find some room. Okay. John, would you like to go in the NRO report?
Okay, I'm John Curran. I'm the secretary of the Number Resource Organization. Raul is the chair, but is unable to be here, so he asked that I fill in. I'm going to go fairly quickly through this. We welcome any questions. So, Number Resource Organization is the vehicle for RIR cooperation and representation. It was formed for the purposes of protecting the unallocated number resource pool, promoting and protecting the bottom-up policy development process, and acting as a focal point for internet community input into the RIR system. We are established as the ASO within the ICANN framework by an MOU that was signed in 2004. Next. Current offices, as I said, Raul Echibarra is chairman. I serve as secretary, and Paul Wilson serves as the treasurer this year. We have coordination groups, which consist of the leads in each of our 5 RIRs in each of the various departments get together to make sure we're working together in terms of how we implement things, how we make sure that the system acts as one. So that includes an engineering coordination group. Arturo Servan serves as that. Communications coordination group, chaired by Ernesto, and registration services managers, chaired by Leslie Nobile. So I want to talk a little bit about allocations of address space. In terms of address space that's been issued over time, if you look, this graph goes back 12 years, and it shows the allocations of blocks to each of the regional internet registries. These blocks are slash 8s, or 16 million addresses each. And you can see over time, by the colors, we've had an increase in demand in all the regions for address space, and that's caused us to pretty much go through all of IPv4. The next slide shows the cumulative effect of this on the IPv4 central pool, or the unallocated pool, as it went from, back in 1999, 107 blocks available. With the growth of the internet and the success of our policies, it's gone all the way down, and then in 2011, the free pool is depleted. Based on the global policy approved by the five RIRs and ratified by the board, when we got to the final 5/8 address blocks, they were allocated one each to each of the RIRs, and that occurred on February 3rd of this year. And if you look, you'll see a nice picture of us all. Next slide. Oh, that's it. You got it. That's fine. And so that concludes the NRO update. We're the executive coordination body for the ASO.
I guess this is real collaboration. Thank you all very much. But I can't get to the speaker now. So can everyone hear me if I speak and lean this closely, lie down on the table? Okay. How do I get the thing to come up?
Straight to the point.
Yeah.
Okay.
PowerPoint. Hit that.
Oh, yeah.
Third one. There you go.
Yeah, I know that's, but I want it up there. That's the.
It should go.
Exactly. It should. I could just talk to my slides.
Have you tried it?
They're not. They're pretty, but they're not dramatic. Okay.
Got something.
Aha. Success. It's happening.
Next to Skype is PowerPoint. There you go.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. So sorry for the slight delay. Next time I'll bring all the right adapters, etc. So my presentation about what's going on in the world of IANA. And some people have asked me, well, now that you don't have any of unallocated free pool left, how are you going to retire? So that is my goal someday, but I'm not quite ready. So our overview from the IANA today is three major topics: the numbers registries that we continue to administer, the Internet Number Resource Certification, and IPv6 Outlook or Outreach. So basically, we still have a big, big bundle of IPv6 IP addresses that we take care of. And at this point in time, it seems unlikely that there will be a lot of further allocations to RIRs in the near term from the IPv6 block. You all have a big block, each of you, at this point in time. And the ICANN staff, the IANA, particularly Leah Vagoda, who's an expert in this area, as you all know, and your staff are cooperating on clarifying the request and allocation process for IPv6 as we go forward. So that's an activity we're currently engaged with you all. So It is true that the unallocated space is fully allocated, though you will see a little exception in a few slides later, but that's just a teaser to keep you listening. And we are discussing the details of Internet Number Resource Certification with the RIRs on behalf of a letter we received from the NRO, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, too. And Terry Manderson has been working on an Internet draft that he will, you know, be submitting in consultation with you all. So basically, we do have a special purpose address registry. And this special purpose address registry is documented in RFC 5735. We have just recently allocated something from that special purpose registry. So it's not like we don't give anything away anymore. We just registered this one. And so basically, it's probably too small for everybody to read, but this is just a sample of the IANA IPv4 Special Purpose Address Registry, and it shows that this new allocation has been recently made on June 10th from this to this registry. So this is the teaser part. I said there are a few little addresses that we are still holding on to at this point in time. There are 27/24s that are assigned to the IANA, and at this point in time, there's no existing global policy which would allow us to do anything with them except hold them. And we're happy to hold these in trust until the RIRs and the NRO and the ASO determine a global policy of what to do with them, and if any other addresses were to come back to us, either by being abandoned or some other, I don't know, drop from the sky, something of that nature, we would again just hold on to them in trust until we have a policy that we receive from you all on how to go forward with these. But I know there has been some discussion on some mailing lists about these 27/24s, and people seem to think that we've been hiding them from the world. We're not trying to hide anything. It's just there's no policy. The most current and existing global policy on what we can allocate is for a /8. We don't have any guidelines for what to do with /24s. So we continue to maintain them for the trust of the global internet. So the other numbers space that we have that has some exciting things going on are the AS number space, the autonomous system numbers. And we have one pool based on the global policy that collapsed the two pools into a single pool. We now have one pool of AS numbers from which to allocate. And there's no distinction in that pool between, I mean, other than the obvious distinction, between the 16-bit and the 32-bit numbers. That was the previous policy that we had two separate pools. Now we have a single pool. And some RIRs may have problems with a high rate of return of the 32-bit AS numbers. And in this case, that's, I don't know why there's spelling mistakes here. I guess my spell check wasn't working. I do apologize. That could cause a problem if some RIR runs out of the 16-bit AS numbers. So potentially you could envision, this hasn't happened yet, but potentially that if someone runs out of the 16-bit AS numbers and they have a request from someone who's unable to use, based on old hardware or old equipment, the 32-bit ASN number, and the RIR itself does not qualify for a new allocation of AS numbers, the RIR may find itself between a rock and a hard place or between policy and reality. So this is not something that's happened yet, but at this point in time, the IANA has no policy on how to help the RIRs or the customer of the IRR who finds themselves in difficulties trying to get a new AS number. So my expectation is that you guys will provide guidance to us at some point in time, and until then, we are anxiously awaiting it. So let me move to my second agenda topic, which is Internet Number Resource Certification, better known as RPKI. So the technology has been developed in the IETF, and there are a lot of documents that are related to this. There are 10 in the RFC editor queue, one in IESG evaluation, and another awaiting the AD confirmation. So this slide just basically lists them and says, you know, where they are and in which queue. So this technology, which supports Internet Number Resource Certification, which is the goal versus the technology, is RPKI, and it's being promoted by the IAB, the IETF, various RIRs, and ICANN. So to that effect, we, being ICANN, received a letter from the NRO on behalf of the ASO and the RIRs asking us to enter into discussions, us being ICANN / IANA, into discussions to, I'm sure you can't read that, but if you'd like, I'll read it. It says, the NRO would like to resume discussions about the implementation of a global trust anchor for the RPKI system. As you are all aware, the NRO agreed in 2009 to support the implementation of such a trust anchor as a recognized single point of trust reflective of the global IP address allocation hierarchy. We would like to move these discussions a step forward. The NRO would like to enter into discussions with ICANN, conducting also proper talks with IAB for a global trust anchor, GTA, to be operational in the near future. The NRO would be interested to task ICANN with the management of the GTA as a supplemental technical activity. We look forward to hearing you from you about this proposal. So we did receive this letter in February of 2011, and ICANN has accepted the invitation to enter into discussions. And we have had one meeting at an IETF meeting with the technical representatives to kind of kick off ideas of what these discussions should entail and what the planning process should be to progress this activity. So my final agenda topic is IPv6 outreach. So a number of developing countries have spoken to our regional liaisons, that means the ICANN's regional liaisons, and asked for short workshops on IPv6. So just recently in May, we were a participant in an IPv6 workshop in the British Virgin Islands. So you can see a picture of the participants and Michelle Cotton, who most of you know through the IETF or some other forum, was our representative and gave the IPv6 presentation in that workshop. We've also received a request just recently in conjunction with Aaron to provide technical trainers for a workshop in Jamaica in early July. So those are two things that are on our most recent calendar for working with the community and collaborating with the RIRs to provide workshops on IPv6. And I want to thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, or at least take the questions. Well, thank you very much for your attention, and I'll pass this back to Louis.
Thank you very much, Elise. So moving on, I'll touch on the World IPv6 Day. We were unable to get an ISOC representative, but I've passed this information on to them for what we plan to present. And here we go. So a couple weeks ago, on June 8th, many, many websites around the world, more than 1,000, including carriers, content delivery networks, participated in World IPv6 Day. It's a global-scale trial for V6 gives you a Cornea 24-hour test flight. So this way, if you have users that are experiencing problems, you actually have a day to track all that information, and it'll be okay because everybody else is doing it. So there was a technical meeting last week where some of the carriers and ISPs and folks that participated gave their impression of what happened. This is my summary of what the message was from them. So from them, it felt like Y2K. After preparations were completed, most everything worked very well. From the enterprise, their message, some of them that participated, World IPv6 Day, gave us the management visibility and support we needed to dedicate the resources to implement IPv6. At Equinix, we run an internet exchange, actually many public internet exchanges around the world. This was presented in the Peering Boff, the Birds of a Feather session, where, as you can see, this is V6 traffic across our multiple exchanges in aggregate. Prior to IPv6 day, it was just a trickle at about 180 megabits per second. And on IPv6 day, you see there's a big jump. Now, the message is that after IPv6 day, while the traffic did go down somewhat, it stayed up about 3 times as much as it used to be. So this tells me that many sites that turned on IPv6 for the day left it in there. They didn't find any problems, so they are now V6 enabled. So as I had alluded, there was a panel discussion at the NANOG 52 in Denver, Colorado, just last week. You can see the abstract and the panel presentations at the link provided there. I should have made a shorter link for everybody to copy down, but if you download the presentation, you can just use the link from there. And as you can see also on the bottom of every World IPv6 Day slide, there's a link to the authoritative information. Any questions about that? All right, moving on. Global number.
Yes, Louis, I have one question. You showed the graph of V6 traffic there. Out of interest, what's that proportional to the V4 traffic?
We're on the multi-gig on our exchanges, so 100 gig. So this is proportionally very small, but... Go ahead, Kuwe.
I'd like to share one more information for all of you also. Actually, my institution monitoring, you know, how many websites actually turned on the IPv6 on the IPv6 days. And at that time, actually, I thought it is 19,216. So... you see the ISOC is 1,000 there. I think that is just the company. But total of the number actually is much more than that. I think there's a really, compared with, on the main, I'm tracking, on the main actually only 2,825. So you can see in the IPv6 day, we are almost from 2,825 to 19,000. That's really, I think it's a good experimental and to see it happen.
I have a slide I'd like to share from Yahoo. We have, oh boy, let's see if I can change that view better. There we go. This is by region. The region that had the most V6 traffic that day was Europe. the bottom two were US and AP NIC. This is how Yahoo had broken down their traffic. So by country per hour, it's France that's way up there. So good job, France. Yay. And these slides are available from the panel discussion website. Okay. All right. Global number policy and global proposals. There are three existing global policies, and I'm not going to go over them, being that many here are already very well aware of them. And here's three more. Now, the proposal that is had been active for that we've designated, GPP IPv4 2009, is a global policy for allocation of IPv4 blocks to the IRRs. Right now, it shows the status of being abandoned because it no longer meets the criteria to be advanced by the NROEC to the AC as a global policy, because there is revised text substantially made in one region. For one that is the next one that had been proposed was GPP IPv4 2010. This is the global policy for IPv4 allocations by the IANA post-exhaustion. This, as you can see from the list in the status, that in LATNIC it had been withdrawn, in APNIC it had been abandoned, AFRINIC did not gain its consensus. So this is not looking like it will be a global policy. The newest one, GPP IPv4 2011, global policy for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanisms by the IANA. Now, this also allows IANA to receive addresses from the RIRs and to also allocate space back to the RIRs. There are varying status, and this still does have the potential to be global policy. In AFRINIC, it has reached last call, adopted in APNIC, still under discussion at ARIN. LATNIC, it's back to the list for further discussion. And at RIPE NCC, also under discussion. This page shows the differences in between the policy proposals. So in each version, some changes were made to address the issues of that's seen in the other proposals in various regions. So in the latest one, return to IANA is voluntary, and the eligibility for receiving space, equal distribution to the RIRs. This has a sense of fairness by the authors. So this is under discussion, and we'll see what the outcome is. Next, we'll cover the regional policy proposals, just a few words about them. For IPv4 policies, in active, there are 50 of them around the world. This covers allocation, reclamation, and transfer. We're not going to talk about every single one of them. IPv6 address policies, there are 6 of them. In WHOIS changes, 7, and others, 5. So in total, there are 68 regional policy proposals being discussed. And next, we have Alan Barrett from the AFRINIC region. I'm sorry about that text there.
It's double speak.
Do you have your source so you can see what that looks like at least? We'll get that fixed for the version that's posted up next.
Yeah, I don't know why it looks like that.
Do you have your version?
I do.
Okay.
Have my version.
maybe you can just speak to that.
Secret ASO code.
Am I plugging my laptop here?
No, I hope it's just that one slide. And it's
on and check.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Does have the same issue?
No.
No, they're all messed up.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So excuse me, I'm going to have to go to my 2 o'clock.
Right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope it was informational and not just...
I do apologize. I have a 2 o'clock conflict, but thank you for giving me some time to speak to you all. Bye-bye.
Okay, so I'm Alan Barrett. I'm appointed by the AFRINIC board to sit on the ASOAC, and I'm going to tell you briefly about some current policy discussions in the AFRINIC region and our process. So our process is rather similar to most of the other RIRs. There are some small differences. Anybody can propose a new policy relating to the work that AFRINIC does, which is dealing with IPv4 and V6 numbers and AS numbers and related issues. New policies are discussed on a mailing list called RPD, the Resource Policy Discussion mailing list. Discussions have to go on for at least 4 weeks before a public meeting, and we have 2 public policy meetings per year. So at least 4 weeks before the public policy meeting, you have to start discussing a new proposal. If you meet that deadline, then your proposal can be discussed at a public policy meeting. If we achieve consensus at the public policy meeting, then sometime later, there'll be a last call on the RPD mailing list, and the last call goes on for 2 weeks. There's usually a delay between the public policy meeting and the last call, and the length of the delay is not defined in the policy. It basically, usually the policies have to be edited slightly because changes can be suggested and approved at the meeting, and just administrative delays before the last call. Then, during the last call, if the chairs of the policy working group decide that the community has consensus for the proposal, they recommend that the board should ratify it. The board has several meetings per year. It could take them a month or two to consider and ratify the proposal, and then after that it can be implemented. Next slide. So recently we've had 3 proposals approved in the last 6 months. A proposal about abuse contact information in the WHOIS database reached consensus at the AFRINIC 13 meeting in November 2010, and it passed its last call a few months ago, and it was ratified by the board a few days ago. So this proposal essentially is instructing the staff to add a new mechanism to the WHOIS database so that if an ISP wants to register, a special way that they can be contacted to deal with abuse issues, then this new database field is available for them. And the point of that is that if somebody is trying to deal with abuse, like fighting spam or something, they want to be able to look up the records to figure out who to contact at the ISP. Another policy which has recently been approved is the IPv4 soft landing policy. We've been discussing this for a few years now, and it's finally reached consensus. Essentially, it's providing stricter rules as we run out of IPv4 space. So when we get down to only 1/8 remaining in the AfriNIC pool, then the rules get tighter, and the largest amount of space that you can apply for at one time is reduced. And then there's another boundary when we get to only 11 left over, then the maximum allocation size gets reduced even more. There's also some space reserved for unforeseen future needs, and it's not defined really how that will be used, but it's just held in reserve in case a year or two or three from now we discover some new transition strategy that needs some space, we'll have some available for that. So this has reached consensus at the public meeting a couple of weeks ago, but the last call has not yet started. We expect the last call to start sometime in the next month or two. Then there was a global policy. Louis talked about the three global policies addressing very similar issues about V4 space return to the IANA. So the one that's just been passed in AfriNIC is the 2011 version of that. It reached consensus at the AfriNIC 14 meeting a week ago. The last call also has not yet started. Other policies which have been discussed but not approved are the 2010 version of the global policy for V4 space return to the IANA. It has not reached consensus, and it seems unlikely that it ever will because it conflicts with the 2011 proposal, which has reached consensus. You can't approve them both because they say different things about the same subject. And there have been about five other proposals, and I'm not listing them all one by one. Several proposals dealing with V4 address transfer, allocation of V4 addresses outside the AfriNIC region, reclamation of V4 space which is allocated but not used, and none of these proposals have reached consensus. Some have been withdrawn by the authors, others are still formally up for discussion. Okay, next. Right, and then if you want to participate, here's how you can do it. You can read about the policy development process, you can read the current policies, and you can read any new proposals on the AfriNIC website. Just go to www.afrinic.net, and near the top of the screen, click on policy. It'll take you to a page that lists all the policies and procedures. That page, unfortunately, is not always up to date, but you can usually find what you're looking for if you click around enough. And
that was the last one.
Well, yeah, we talked about the top third of that slide. Okay, then you can join the RPD mailing list. It's open to anybody. You don't have to be in Africa. So, again, go to the AfriNIC website, click on mailing lists near the top. There's a list of mailing lists. Look for RPD, and you can read the archives, or you can subscribe to the list. And you can attend our public policy meetings. The next one is in November. It'll be in Cameroon. The exact venue has not yet been set. All we know is that it'll be in the country of Cameroon. Okay, so that's it. Anybody is welcome to participate. Thanks, Louis.
Any questions for Alan? Okay.
Next up, we have Andy Linton for representing APNIC region.
Okay, I've got a few slides which are sort of fairly similar to Alan's. I'm sure Louise will be very cross if I don't point out the new corporate identity at the bottom left-hand corner of the slide. So APNIC has rebranded itself, and there certainly has been some discussion about what the two colons and brackets means. You know, I take it to read just lots of zeros, but that's just a V6 view of the world. You know. So in similar sort of fashion to the other RIRs, we have an open, transparent, bottom-up process, and we have a similar process to the one Alan described. The timings are a little bit different, sort of slightly longer before the conferences, and the last call process lasts for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It's sort of longer than the AFRINIC one. And again, we have this idea that we do this by reaching consensus, so the policy chairs and co-chairs. There are actually three positions there at the moment. I'm currently acting chair because we've actually had our current chair resign and so on. So, but that will come back to three, a group of three at the next meeting in Busan. We actually had a very busy time at the last APNIC meeting. I joined the group of co-chairs, and I wasn't quite sure what I was letting myself in for, but we had 11 policy proposals. Six reached consensus, three didn't, and one was sent back to the list and one withdrawn. So you can look at the URL there. You can have a look at all this stuff and follow it through. I'll go through on the next slide sort of the main points. It's a little bit small, but the main ones here were a proposal for the distribution of IPv4 addresses once the final /8 period starts. Some of this stuff was, of course, a lot more pressing for APNIC because we didn't have the luxury of having a long time to wait for this. And in fact, we got into the last /8 policy, I think, 2 days before the final call process finished. So we were right up against the wire on this. So that first policy was to handle the address space after that, and we had some discussion about other address space that we would get after we got into the last /8, and the agreement was that we would actually treat that all the same rather than have some complicated policy that said, well, this block's coming out of the last /8 and this one's coming out of another block and so on. We also did a little tweak to things to reduce the minimum delegation size. The minimum delegation size under the last /8 policy in the region was /22, but we recognised there might be a case where some people didn't actually need that much or didn't need that much straight away. So we've put something in place where you can come and get a 24 and come back for the other pieces of that /22 if you need them. So we're allowing people to behave responsibly and just take a small bite rather than take the whole lot. And we also, there's been a fairly strong movement in the APNIC region to remove sort of constraints about all this because we recognise that one of the things we had in the past is we had the stick of saying, you know, if you don't behave properly, we won't give you more IPv4 address space. And then we have the other side of that coin. Well, we have no more IPv address space, for address space to give you, so we have no stick anymore. So we thought, let's not play this game. There's a note there that we reached consensus on a revised text. One of the things that has worked pretty well is that when we get to the policy SIG meeting, sometimes things get raised on the floor, and we actually allow minor amendments to allow us to get a policy through. So go to the next slide. This proposal 83 was about, some people had come back to us and said, you know, there are some circumstances, you might get a /32 from the registry, and this looks like, you know, more space than you ever can dream of using. But there are some circumstances when people need to have more than one /32. And this and another proposal I'll talk about slightly when we move on, were about saying there are circumstances when this happens and we should allow the registry staff to make decisions about what's the correct process and what's the correct circumstance when people could actually apply for an additional 32. The other proposal here was about transfer of space between RIRs. And I suppose in summary what this says is if your RIR will allow transfers to us, we'll allow transfers to you, I suppose is the short summary of this. Again, recognising that people will move this stuff around or potentially will want to move this stuff around. And I suppose the big conflict or the big tension for us was at this stage, conservation of the address space is clearly an important thing to allow us to use the V4 space to manage that as well as we can, but also the records in the database are really important, so that's sort of making sure that we keep those up to date and keep them correct is a really important issue. And the final one on here is as Alan has mentioned, the third of those global policies. This was, we actually had the 2010 and the 2011 policy discussed at the same time. And the clear consensus was that this 2011 policy was the one that was favoured in the region, and the other one fell because of that. So we're now waiting for other people to either agree to this one or we go around the loop again and think about, you know, how we're going to deal with this one. So last slide. Okay, these three are still under discussion on the policy SIG list, so they're basically carried over, if you like. This proposal 87, in a sense, folds into the one that was on the previous page, I think it was 83, which was the one about, you know, are there other circumstances in which you need more than a /32? And that one's still running. It probably will surface again at the next meeting, but we'll see how that goes. The frequent WHOIS update, information update one, the person who had proposed this didn't turn up at the meeting to sort of talk to it, and so we've held it over until a future time. And again, the maintaining demonstrated needs requirement and transfer policy, that one didn't reach consensus and it's sort of gone back to the list, but there's a little bit of a dilemma here in that we have now gone into the last /8 policy and we are now allocating addresses out of that. So if we, under a policy that doesn't have this transfer in, it's not quite clear how this one will work. If we've already done some transfers or done some changes without this policy, can we retrofit it and so on? So these are the ones that are didn't reach consensus, but there we go. Again, our, like Alan's last slide, you know, our process is open. People can come, they can take part in the process, and we're always keen to sort of have other people's views on this. So that's my set of notes.
Thank you, Andy. Do we have any questions? Okay. All right, I will present the ARIN policy and proposals. Of course, like many other, like all the other RIRs, there are several ways to participate. Mailing lists, attending the public policy meetings, and you can also attend via remote. This is open to everyone. And as you see on there, there's the link to the policy proposals and to the PPML mailing list where the discussion happens. Recently implemented policies. There are three here on this slide. Waiting lists for unmet IPv4 requests, IPv6 subsequent allocations, and rework of the IPv6 assignment criteria. Now, with that first one, waiting list for unmet IPv4 requests, the ARIN will make allocation assignments as a single continuous range of addresses, or you can wait in line. Unused space must be returned to ARIN. In the IPv6 subsequent allocation, subsequent allocations will also be considered for deployments that cannot be accommodated by nor were accounted for under the initial allocation. For instance, the 6RD. And the rework of IPv6 assignment criteria, this is done on nibble boundary assignments based on site counts. So for instance, it starts with /48 and for 1 to 12 sites, then /44 for 13 to 192 sites. And so a site is a discrete location that is part of an organization's network, as defined by this. We have a number of policies under recent discussions. Awaiting board review are the four you see listed here: better IPv4 allocations for ISPs, reserve pool for critical infrastructure, shared transition space for IPv4 address extension, and returned IPv4 addresses. These were covered in our last session, so I won't continue on, but John has input.
I just want to say, just for people tracking those, all of those were ratified by the board, except Aaron 2011-5, shared transition space for IPv4 address exhaustion. That particular policy looks to have Aaron allocating something which might be considered a specialized technical reservation, and we're in the process of getting the IAB and ISG's view on that particular one before the board moves on it.
I appreciate that update. Thank you, John. There is a text being revised by the Aaron Advisory Council for Aaron 2011-1, the Globally Coordinate Transfer Policy. This is allowing a needs-based transfer to and from the Aaron region, basically an inter-RIR transfer policy. There are more than 15 new proposals on subject matters, mostly on subject matter of transfers. You may see those on the link provided. And in October, we will have an Aaron meeting in Philadelphia. This is a joint back-to-back meeting with the NANOC community, the Network Operators Group of North America. Any questions? Thank you. Moving on, we will have Francisco Obispo presenting from remote for the LACNIC policy and proposals. Francisco, do we have you?
Yes, can you hear me?
Thank you.
All right. First, I would like to apologize for not being able to be present at that fabulous location. This is going to be a short presentation on the LACNIC policy activities. So I can't see what you guys are seeing, so I'm going to be going through my slides, and I'm going to be asking Louis to switch slides eventually. So you guys should be looking at slide 53 with the title LACNIC Updates. So first of all, LACNIC has a similar policy development process as many of the other RIRs. So I did not want it to repeat and be redundant on the same information, but yeah, it's very similar, and the information is available on the website. So let's go to the next slide on the LACNIC meetings. Well, LACNIC meetings.
Okay, we're on LACNIC meetings now. Thanks.
Excellent. So LACNIC meetings are very special in the sense of that they go in parallel with several other meetings that take place in the same venue. So LACNIC is very generous on providing facilities and accommodations for many, many of the internet-related organizations in Latin America. So, for example, LACTLD, which is the organization that manages the CCTLDs in the Latin American region, meet during the same week as LACNIC. So we have the LACTF, which is an IPv6 task force. We have the Latin American IPv6 Forum. We have the Latin American Security Forum. LACNIC recently started inviting governments to also participate in the policy development process. So there's a LAC governments meeting. There's a regional interconnection forum, and also recently the LACNOG, which is the network operators group. So I can definitely say that this is the most important internet-related event that happens in Latin America. And I'm happy also to say that it's gone from one meeting per year to now several. And if you go to the next slide, please, you should be on a slide that has a fabulous picture.
Yes, LACNIC 15.
Okay, LACNIC 15. So as you can see, that's not a picture from a magazine or anything like that. That was actually taken from my hotel room. So that was in Cancun, Mexico, from May 15th to the 20th. There were 297 participants from 32 different countries. And LACNIC is also very focused on having also workshops happening during the same week. So we had those workshops that you can see, introduction to IPv6, RPKI, DNS, and operations, and also CSERTs. So as you can see, there are several things going on, and although you can see that beautiful picture, people usually are very busy. So unless they put some time either before or after the meeting, that's as close as you can get to the beach. So, but it's very fun. So next slide, please. Okay, so regarding policies in LACNIC 15, there were several proposals that were discussed during the public forum, but these were the ones that reached consensus. So we have the LAC 2011-01, which seek the elimination of technical restrictions on IPv6 prefix deaggregation, and pretty much try to remove some of the technical things that or technical requirements that were imposed by LACNIC to members look or members that had IPv6 blocks assigned to them. So yeah, that's kind of a way of being coherent with the IPv4 policy that's currently active in the region. So we had the initial IPv6-4 address allocation and assignment policy modified, and that basically means that we are going to start, or the LACNIC region is going to start asking for IPv6 plans if you are a newcomer asking for IPv4. So this is a way of encouraging new ISPs and new organizations to also deploy IPv6. And as Louis already mentioned, the global policy for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanism by the IANA was also reached consensus. So it's currently on the mailing list. For last call on the mailing list. So next slide, please. So you should see you should be seeing a list of policies that did not reach consensus.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we have among them, some policies that basically did not reach consensus due to either conflicts with other policies that were around there, or that were not, basically did not have enough support during the or enough discussion. So those were back to the mailing list, and we hope to see them mature in the near future. So next slide. There's an upcoming meeting next month in Suriname in the Caribbean, and just recently LACNIC also announced their LACNIC 16 meeting, which is to happen in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And it's happening in parallel with the LACNOC meeting. So I look forward to being there. And if you are interested, please go to the next slide. You will see the link to LACNIC and also how to participate on the mailing lists. So if you guys have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francisco. Any questions? Okay, moving on. Hans Petter.
Thank you, Louis. I'm going to ask a question to the audience first. Raise your hand if you have been to a RIPE meeting in the past. Raise your hand if you have not been to a RIPE meeting in the past. So, okay, a couple people. Interesting to know. Next slide. First here is a slight presentation of the community. It's a slightly larger interpretation of Europe. You can actually go on to the next slide, which is the core of the policy proposal, which policy process, which is slightly different than the other regions because there is no requirement for a physical meeting to take part in developing a process. That's one of the features that we have put together in purpose so that it's actually possible to, in a clearly timely manner, the minimum time that you can run the whole process is 19 weeks. I'm not sure that has ever happened, but it was designed so that it would be possible for the community to do adjustments quickly if needed. So the process is a discussion phase with at least 4 weeks. Then there is some time for documentation after the discussion phase. A review phase is then coming up. Kind of a last before the determining whether it's a consensus by the working group chair. Then there is 4 weeks of last call, and then it's determined whether there is consensus for this policy. And there is no role for the executive board in the policy process in the RIPE region. The final decision on consensus or not is done by the working group chairs, not only for the working group handling the policy, but all of them. So it's by design, not linked to the management of the RIPE NCC. So that's the difference. The sort of difference between the RIPE NCC process and the other regions, as I understand them. So if we move on to that slide, yes, thank you. There is a very, very old proposal there from 2006, and I did some research to try to figure out what happened to this one with PI assignment sizes. And it seems that the last significant discussion was in 2009, and the proposal has been passed back to the author because there was no consensus on this, and there has so far not been any response from the author. There has been some discussions on the meetings, I think, on that, yes, it's really a good idea, but the wording and proposal was banned, so this needs to be followed up. If we then move on to the PI, let me scroll down my notes here, the certification policy, which is an initiative to make sure that a holder of address space can get a digital certificate from the RIPE NCC in order to sort of document electronically that, yes, these are my addresses. This has actually been concluded and awaiting a decision from the working group chairs for consensus or not. Then there is a temporary internet number assignment policies, which is basically addresses for experiments or conferences or things that have a temporary nature, and that is also in the same phase awaiting decision from working group chairs. Then there is a policy which is kind of interesting in nature because it's about removing multi-homing as a requirement for provider independent space in V6. And it's actually to take away the whole notion of provider independent versus provider aggregatable, and in unifying those two and saying that, well, you need address space, document the need and get the addresses. And we really don't have any sort of restrictions on how you use it. And then I'll touch the last two ones at the same time because you have.
I think I'm going to stop importing presentations.
Yeah, okay.
I'll let somebody else do the work because it's not working quite right.
Okay, but there is original policy for post-depletion V4 recycling, which it tends to define better how the address management of the returned IPv4 address space will be performed when the final /8 policy comes into effect. And that's actually out of discussion phase right now and awaiting documentation. And then there is, of course, the global policy for post-extortion IPv4 allocation mechanisms by the IANA. And this is the third or fourth or fifth, I can't really remember, variation of, it's kind of hard to protect. And this is actually the pure global part of that policy, which says what IANA should do with addresses once they're returned, and not addressing what the RIR should do with those addresses. And hopefully we will have global consensus on this soon. And this actually had a discussion phase that ended on the May 19th, and it's awaiting documentation according to the RIPE NCC website. So that was the brief overview of the policies. Any questions? Oh, next slide. So how to participate? Well, you will find information on the website. There is a description there on the policy development process. It's in the third documented version, according to the number of RIPE documents referenced there, and there are a couple of historic versions of it before that. So we're probably on version 6 or 7 of the development process, saying something about the maturity of it. You can find all the archived policy proposals there, and the RIPE NCC has policy development officer, Emilio, who helps the working group chairs with the logistics of this, and he can be reached both by email and by Twitter. And maybe there is even one more slide?
Sorry, no.
Nope. Okay, so the last thing I should say then is that the next RIPE meeting is in Vienna, starting the last day of October and continuing into the first week of November. So I hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Thank you, Hans Petter. Any questions for him? Okay, just some closing comments, questions, answers. So please watch the ASOAC website for news about the new global policy proposals. We have a table on there now that summarizes the active proposals that you can just go to and link to the discussions that are going on. And you can, this will help you participate in the policy discussions in your region. The global policy proposals are discussed on the mailing list and on the open policy meetings. So you may subscribe. There is no membership requirements. And just go ahead and state your opinion. By no membership requirements, it even refers to whether you live in the region or not. It doesn't just mean whether you are some sort of official member where you are paying dues. So if you live outside a region and you have a viewpoint, go ahead and state your opinion. Of course, again, there is no membership requirements for that, and you may also attend the RIR meetings, both in person for a nominal fee and remote, which is free. Okay, this concludes the presentation. Are there any questions? Please, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
I don't know if it is the time to... for this specific topic, but I'm aware that there is an ASO review underway. Could we say a few words about that?
Sure. Sitting next to you right here are the representatives of the group that are conducting the ASO review. They are here interviewing various folks that have a view on the numbering world. So if you'd like to address the group.
Maybe just to present ourselves. I'm Hervé Ranoux, ITEMS International, and I'm in charge of this review. Last year we have carried out the CCNSO review, and we are proud to have been chosen for this review. We have met a lot of part of the people here around here, and we are open to have other discussion and with all of us. we are supposed to deliver first draft of our review to the next ICANN meeting in Dakar and to end this job in November. I don't have... Tom is in my team, and I think everybody knows Raimundo Baker is with us for this review. Thanks.
On the methodology we are using, we are making a personal interview to a number of persons. We have about 80 people to interview. We have done this week about 40, and we think we'll complete 50 this week. And the other ones we are going to have either in the car or. We are also going to visit the five rails in their meetings from now to the end of the year. We have one problem with LACNIC because with the LACNIC makes one meeting a year, but they have a LACNOC meeting, so we are going to attend their LACNOC meeting. And our final report will be provided by the end of the year to the NRO. And of course, well, you know now, the three of us, anyone in the room may contact us and see if they want to add something. Okay?
Did you have a question down there?
Yes, this is Andres. I just want to point out that just a little bit, a little thing. Since last year, LACNOC meeting also... there's also held with a policy forum. So when a policy forum in LACNIC is developed, it's an official LACNIC meeting. So now we have two each year. That's a very technical issue situation, but okay.
You appreciate that. Now, Thomas, did you have?
Well, not much more to add to that, apart from that at this meeting and at the other meetings that we'll be attending, we will be carrying out the kind of review interviews that we've had with some of you here. That's to say, face-to-face interviews. Another aspect of our review is that we will be conducting an online survey, which will, in many ways, it will cover the same themes that will have been covered in the face-to-face interviews, but is an opportunity for you just to. Rather an opportunity for us to collect data in a more statistical way, which we can then present in the form of graphs and things like that in the report. That's really about it from me. Apart from those of you who have already been interviewed by us know who you are, but there are lots of others sitting around this table, and if we could possibly ask you just to come and. See us at the end of this meeting so that we can fix up an appointment before we leave.
Paul?
Thanks. I've had my interview with the review team, and it was quite an interesting process to be asked to articulate thoughts about performance of the ASO and the performance of the structure and so on. I'd encourage everyone with the interest to... with a genuine interest in the ASO to get involved and help with the process. One of the difficulties that that I think many may have with the ASO review, and which the review team may also have, is just to be clear about the distinction between the ASO and the NRO. The fact that the ASO is the function of ICANN within the ICANN process that is performed under an agreement between the NRO and ICANN, and it's the performance of the ASO that's under review here. It's not the performance of the NRO and the all of the various activities that are NRO activities. The RIRs run a bunch of coordinated technical activities and communications activities and so on, and none of those fall under the ASO MOU. Would probably make the review team's job easier to sort of see a clear picture of that, but I'm sure if we need to, we'll those of us who have an interest will try to help further where we can. Can I change the subject
Louis?
Just let me ask if there are any other comments and questions about this. Go ahead.
Yeah. I must only congratulate you because apparently interviews can be conducted in French, in Spanish, or in English. Is that correct? So that's a real improvement.
And if there's no other comments about this, we'll move on to another topic. Paul?
I was wondering, Louis, if you'd be interested in any perspectives from APNIC as the first of the RIRs that exhausted the supply of IPv4 address space in our region.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was a matter of a huge amount of speculation and a huge amount of thought and inquiry and prediction and so on as particularly as APNIC approached the end of our IPv4 supply, and that happened. Well, the order of events, of course, was the final IANA allocations in February, and at that event, although the final allocation was an allocation of 1/8 to each of the 5 RIRs, it was triggered by an allocation request from APNIC for 2 further /8s as a standard allocation. So we left that meeting with 3 new /8s in our hot little hands. We then went and over the next couple of months had continued to manage that in according to the same policy processes we always have. We did actually go through a staged process administratively in approaching the end of that pool, because we found that as we approached the end and we had a queue of IPv4 requests waiting for us, then we had the potential for all sorts of dispute, obviously, particularly as we reached the end of that queue and would start to actually deny the address space requests. So we took some measures internally. We reported these to the community in quite a lot of detail, but to summarise very briefly, we ensured that every request we received was strictly serialised. So we no longer received requests and dealt with them in parallel by different members of staff or different teams, which would allow requests to come in and possibly some to be dealt with faster than others, etc. We strictly serialised all requests. We reviewed all requests by a team of hostmasters who worked together. So the entire team worked together and formed a consensus decision on a decision according to their method on each request. The response time to every request that we received was also fixed at a 5-day response time. So whether or not the response to be given was one of approval of an allocation or denial of an allocation or a request for more information, we also strictly strictly structured the time to a 5-day response. And again, this takes a bit of thinking about, but if you think about the interleaving of requests and so forth, it is also the fairest way to manage that interleaving of requests and responses if the response time from the registry is fixed. So we actually, in addition to that, we also have had over the last at least year an escalation process so that larger requests would actually be handled by more senior teams of APNIC staff. So with all of these things combined, we had a pretty structured approach in the end that was quite transparent too, in terms of letting the community know exactly what we were doing, what changes were being made. They weren't being seen, and we certainly didn't see them as policy changes, but instead as administrative implementation changes in the details of how APNIC was dealing with the requests. We saw, as you've seen in the charts of address space consumption, we saw this rapid growth in APNIC address space allocations. But that's a growth that had been occurring, I'd say, exponentially over several years, such that in 2010, APNIC did allocate around 50% of all of the IPv4 addresses allocated in the world. We account for 50% of the population of the world, and we account for much more than 50% of the actual growth of internet networks in the world, because we've got some very large network communities starting off a much smaller base and a much shorter time frame of growth. So I think is entirely reasonable to see the rate of consumption that we that we experienced and demonstrated. We were very sensitive, of course, to any potentially fraudulent or curious address requests and evaluated those accordingly. But I really would assert that in the scheme of things and according to the scale of our operations, what we saw was pretty much a continuous rapid growth that took us to the end. So as of a couple of years ago, that endpoint was not the final endpoint of our IPv4 address supply. We had a policy in place for the final /8 block to be reserved until it was needed. And so at that point of what we call the end of the standard IPv4 supply at APNIC, which was the middle of April, we then switched into our final /8 policy. And the final /8 policy means that any organization that requests it, whether it's a current member or a new member coming along now or in future, any organization will receive one and one only request of between a /24 and a /22. And so a /22 is a really small number of addresses. It's 1,024 addresses. And so out of our last /8, we've got some 16,000 of those allocations that we can make. So at that rate, we expect those allocations to go on if needed for many, many years. At the current rate, they would go on for at least up to 10 years. And the whole idea of that is that supply of addresses lasts longer than it takes for the IPv6 transition, because if the transition is not complete and someone comes along to APNIC and as a new ISP and wants to join and establish a network, then unless they can get the IPv4 addresses from a reliable supplier, then they don't have the provision for the transition technologies to be used. Interestingly, and I think this is probably the important part, we had very, very little dispute or complaint of any kind through this entire process. We hit that last /8 point with 180-something requests in the queue, so we immediately had to say no or sorry to 180 or so requests and offer them instead the /22 allocation, no matter how big or how dire their need was. We had a total of 6 objections, and they were of the nature of, I've been sick, I've been travelling, I've been wanting to put this request in for a long time, I wasn't able to get back to you, etc., etc. I mean, the requests were pretty trivial. There were some questions as to really why certain things happen in the request process, why we couldn't respond to them earlier, etc., etc. But to our knowledge, all of those things have been dealt with really with a small number of transactions, a small amount of dialogue, and so we have no pending objections or let alone legal issues or problems. We did go through this process very thoroughly in terms of informing the community, using both the policy process in terms of the last /8 being implemented, an open explanation of our administrative processes in terms of explaining to the community through at least a couple of our meetings exactly how we were going to proceed, and then also just the communications, letting the community know what was going on and when. The most difficult part of that, in fact, was not being able to predict. Somehow, as the authority for address space in the Asia Pacific, we're also expected to be able to predict the future. It's quite a challenge to be able to explain that we cannot predict the future, and so there was always an uncertainty with how long the address space was going to last. But as I say, nevertheless, it came together pretty well in the end, and I think the lack of disputes actually demonstrates that the whole situation is in some ways a kind of a once in a lifetime business as usual opportunity to just see a change and get on with continuing the work as we've always expected. So I don't know if there are any other questions about that, but I thought it may have been worth just giving you the first-hand account of the first RIR to hit that point.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. I think I'll incorporate some of those account details in my Friday morning report to the ICANN board.
Certainly. Thanks. happy to help if you want any help with any of the facts about that. I'll help check the numbers with you.
And my apologies to ICANN staff. I'm not probably going to be able to finish writing that report before the end of today. Thoughts on that or other topics? John?
Just a minor note. While Cancun, Hong Kong, and Vienna are beautiful cities, I want to remind people that Philadelphia can be a beautiful city in its own right, and to attend Aaron's upcoming October meeting. Thank you.
Awesome. Andy?
I'm not trying to sort of get the last word on this, John, but I didn't actually remind people about the APNIC meeting in Korea. So people... Yeah.
Honeymoon capital.
I'm actually going to give the last word to Miwa.
Well, please, thank you, suddenly. All right. This is my first time to participate previous session and this ASO session. It was quite informative and interesting, and it's nice to know ICANN community is as a whole interested in IPv6. I just talked with Andreas before we started this session. I think it is quite important for us to identify which stakeholders are approaching with which message, and targeted message with targeted messages for targeted audience in regards with IPv6 transition would be quite important. And I've been working from APNIC's field point of view, constantly trying to approach the APTLD and other people. But still, it is quite challenging. So it would be nice if we can cooperate in the future more proactively and systematically approach to the registries and registrars and those peoples. And if we can provide more input from the ASO point of view to the NSO group, that would be great too. Thank you. Oh, and of course, tomorrow IPv6 session is happening from 9 o'clock, 10:30. So if anyone who wants to pass this postcard, which was developed by our great communication department people, Lou is here sitting, she made this just in time. So please pass along this document, this postcard to everybody whom you know and invite them to come. Thank you. It's a multi-stakeholder approach. So thanks.
Thank you. I may have prematurely cut off comments from the audience. Any questions from the audience? No. All right. Well, thank you all for coming and doing this. Yay.